Hello, listeners. If you're hearing this, I'm going to assume you're at least interested in money and understanding the economy and finances. And some of us want our kids to have that knowledge, too. Check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. You can learn more at greenlight.com/million. And tune in to Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Don't tell anybody I told you this, all right? But economic numbers, oh, they lie sometimes. Our friends at the BBC take us to chemistry class. And hey, was there a big thing in the stock market that I missed today? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. This is the Marketplace podcast for Thursday, the 7th of November. Good as always to have you with us. And you know how every now and then I say something like, boy, capitalism's a funny thing, or man, don't try making sense of this economy, all right? Yeah, well, today is going to be one of those days for you. The Commerce Department gave us its read on the state of the American enterprise this morning. Gross domestic product, GDP in the vernacular, was up 2.8% last quarter. That's a lot more than expected. But before you cue up the happy music, a couple of caveats with that number. First of all, don't believe everything the Commerce Department tells you about GDP, because that number is going to be revised next month and the month after that. We can pretty much guarantee it. Second, and more substantively, a lot of that 2.8% growth on an annual basis comes not from consumer spending, but from companies storing. Marketplace's Mark Garrison explains that one.
Dig a bit into today's report, and you'll see 0.8% of the boost in GDP came from the change in real private inventories. It may sound like an obscure technicality, but it is not. It's actually quite simple and simply bad. Julia Coronado is chief economist at BNP Paribas.
Stores were accumulating a lot of goods to sell, but people weren't buying them.
You can see this at Big Fun, a Cleveland toy store specializing in collectibles. Owner Steve Presser says low third quarter numbers had him feeling the color of the many Smurf toys lining the store shelves.
What we try to do, of course, is sell through our inventory. But if we buy too much in any given month, in this case it was September, I was a little concerned because we were hoping to have a strong summer going into the fall in the final quarter.
Presser sells My Little Ponies, too, but not enough bronies are buying them. Hamilton College economist Ann Owen says tightwad pony fans are an economic nightmare at the worst time.
If I'm a retailer going into the holiday season, I'm very concerned right now.
Okay, she wasn't talking specifically about bronies not shopping, but about everybody.
Consumer confidence is low. The unemployment rate is still relatively high, and all of that impacts consumers' decision about making purchases.
GDP is more than a single number. It's kind of like the Voltron set Presser sells, a big robot made out of several little ones with animal heads, which I always thought was pretty cool. GDP is made of a number of numbers, and in this case, a small one about inventories tells us a little more than the big number. It's a warning, but Presser's confident consumer spending will rebound toward the end of the year.
Well, I'm always a superior optimist, and I'm looking for a very, very strong holiday season.
In other words, a seller of heroes and villains is confident good will prevail. I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
Let it be said that Mark Garrison knows way too much about toys, right? All right, moving on. 72.69% was the big number on Wall Street today. The closing bell pop on Twitter for its first day of trading. $44.90 in real terms. That's up from the offering price of $26. All right, enough with the numbers. That pop, in part, means investors assume they are going to see a whole lot more people using Twitter, which means more people to advertise to and thus more money for the company. The only problem is that Twitter has something of a growth problem. According to a recent Reuters Ipsos poll, 30% of people who join Twitter don't use it because they simply don't get it. But Marketplace's Queenie Kim says history is full of companies that create a product and then sell the need.
You know that notion of supply and demand? That is, that consumer demand drives what's sold. Pinar Yildirim is a marketing professor at the Wharton School of Business, and she says marketers don't really believe that.
So essentially, we believe in marketing that consumers really don't know exactly what they want.
And business history is full of examples of companies that have created products and then sold us on the idea that we need them. David Stewart teaches marketing at Loyola Marymount in Los Angeles.
The microwave oven is a great example of a technology that did not find initial market acceptance.
When microwaves first came out in 1947, Stewart says people didn't see the need for them. They were doing just fine with their conventional ovens. Plus,
the microwave oven essentially was a product that required people to learn how to cook all over again. You couldn't use your metal pots and pans.
So marketers had to teach them what to do. They did in-store demonstrations and paid for people to have microwave dinner parties. Today, few homes are without a microwave. Charles Byers is a marketing professor at Santa Clara University, and he says Twitter could take a page from history.
They do need to do some marketing as to why you should be on Twitter. What do you get from Twitter?
Byers says most consumers think of Twitter like Facebook, a place to talk to friends and share pictures with family. But when they find out it's not really like that, they walk. To keep them, Byers says Twitter needs to promote its TV tie-ins and videos and its role as a go-to site for breaking news. And with its share price soaring, that education starts today. In San Francisco, I'm Queen of Kim for Marketplace.
Two calendar items before we move on, and you can put these in pen, by the way. They are that important. First of all, 8:30 tomorrow morning Eastern Time, the October unemployment report. You are not going to want to miss that one. And then next Thursday, the 14th, at 10 in the morning, the Senate Banking Committee takes up the nomination of Janet Yellen to be the chairman of the Federal Reserve. Chairman, by the way, is the committee's word. On Wall Street today, Twitter was up. The rest of the market was not. Definitively, we'll have the details when we do the numbers. Shares of the two big publicly traded gun manufacturers in this country, Smith & Wesson and Sturm Ruger, followed the general trend on Wall Street today, down almost 2% apiece. The FBI had a report out not too long ago showing gun background checks are falling, and retailers are saying they are seeing demand for both guns and ammunition fall as well. Frank Gerstenkorn owns Guns and Gear out in Cheyenne, Wyoming. We've had him on the program a couple of times. Mr. Gerstenkorn, it's good to talk to you again, sir.
Good to talk to you.
Last time we had you on, 6, maybe 7 months ago, business was pretty good, as I recall. Things were pretty much flying off the shelves. What are you seeing now?
Well, you're right. Things were rocking and rolling back then. Since then, we've moved locations. We're in a new shop. But today, things are a little bit slow. There's a bit of a slump.
Why do you think that is?
Public opinion has an awful lot to do with what goes off our shelves. And right now, I feel that the public is not in a panic.
Give me a sense, would you, sort of off the top of your head, monthly sales in either, you know, pieces or dollar amounts versus monthly sales today?
Versus last year this time?
You know, last time we talked. So 6 months ago versus today.
6 months ago, probably around half.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a big cut.
So are you laying people off? Have you taken a pay cut? What are you doing? Because you can't just keep doing business as normal.
I own my own business. I don't get paid.
You don't get paid.
Everybody else does. We've always had a fairly slim staff. But since I talked with you last, we are down one person on staff.
You had to let that person go.
And we have not replaced. In fact, we let two go and replaced one of them.
Huh. How do you explain, though, Mr. Gerstenkorn, the disconnect between retailers like yourself and the gun manufacturers? I mean, Sturm Ruger and Smith & Wesson are reporting booming quarterly sales. Are all those weapons just sitting in a warehouse somewhere, do you think?
No, they're not. And I think that's a regional kind of thing where we are located right now. And there's another element that plays into our demographic. And since I talked with you last, we've seen three new outlets open for firearms. And a lot of competition. And when you have 16 outlets for firearms in a town that only has 60,000 people, there's a lot of competition.
What are the conversations like now versus 6 or 7 months ago when we talked to you, which was right after Sandy Hook and all of that? And gun control was very big in Washington, and people were talking about that out in Wyoming. What are they talking about now?
There's still some concern about it, and rightfully so, because there is still that group that would like to see gun control come stronger on board. There doesn't seem to be the almost panicky concern about it that you see at times. That could change literally with a statement out of Washington and be different overnight.
Of course. Well, Mr. Gerstenkorn, thanks very much for your time, sir.
Well, I appreciate you calling and talking with you
again. All right. We'll talk to you soon. Frank Gerstenkorn, he is the owner of Guns and Gear out in Cheyenne, Wyoming. There have been two main threads of the healthcare story since the beginning of October: the failures of healthcare.gov, the website for the Affordable Care Act, and then people with individual insurance policies having those policies be canceled and replaced with changed benefits or higher premiums. Enter now, though, a third thread: small businesses hearing from their insurance companies. Anne Hepperman has that story from Phoenix, Arizona.
Doctors Courtney and Matthew Dunn own Dunn Orthodontics in Central Phoenix.
And by that?
It's a small but profitable business, which they've had for about 7 years. Right now, they have 13 full-time employees, which means they don't have to offer health insurance, but they choose to.
We've always offered health insurance. It was easy in the beginning because we only had one employee. Now we have 13 full-time employees.
When do you think he'll be ready for his SureSmile wire?
Just 2 days ago, the Dunns received a letter from their health insurer, Humana, labeled with the title, Important Information Regarding Your Coverage.
Dear Courtney Dunn, you and your employees will not be able to continue your current medical plan in 2014. Review the enclosed information on a new Humana medical plan that includes ACA mandates.
Their insurance plan doesn't meet all of the ACA requirements, and the new plan offered by Humana raised their premiums by 60%.
I got a text from Matt letting me know, and my heart just stopped.
Courtney Dunn says she felt blindsided. She thought they had a good plan. It's covered surgeries, babies, and emergency room visits for employees.
I figured we could keep our plan, hang on to it for a year, kind of see how the whole Affordable Care Act plays out, and then kind of decide next year whether we wanted to jump into the marketplace or whether we just wanted to continue on with our plan.
Now they have about 6 weeks to find out what their plan lacks and what they can do about it. In the meantime, they're meeting with their employees to get input from them. Karen Yant is their receptionist and has a bad back. She wondered, if the Dunns have to drop health insurance as a benefit, will the employees get extra money to pay for it themselves?
Well, and that's the one thing that we've been talking about as a potential option, is having like a, you know, monthly healthcare like bonus or something like that to help to like offset the premiums. But I don't know. Like, we have to like kind of weigh what's going to be best for you guys and what's going to be fair.
Courtney Dunn says they're determined to make this work. They're talking to their insurance broker and reaching out to other small business owners for advice.
I wish I could just say, like, it's going to be okay, like, we're going to find something better, it's all going to work itself out, but it's just the unknown at this point. You know, we're still hoping that we can go on the marketplace and find something that's going to be better, but this is the first time that I've been really, really nervous.
Her husband, Matthew Dunn, says in between patients, he's calling their insurance company to figure it out.
I'm trying to be open about it at this point, given that I still have limited information. I'm trying not to overreact to it. I'm trying to figure out what's best to do for us and our employees. But I just don't know right now.
I'm Ann Hepperman for Marketplace.
Coming up.
It's really a confusing place. It's not a real pleasant experience. You have to look for the cool stuff.
Welcome to Radio Shack. But first, let's do the numbers. Ooh, the wah-wah trombones on Twitter's big day. Kind of not cool, you guys. The Dow Industrial's off 152 points, nearly 1% today. Closed at 15,593. The NASDAQ forfeited 74 points, almost 2% there. 38.57 at the bell. The S&P 500 down 23 points, 1.3%, closed at 1747. Qualcomm dialed down more than 3% today after a disappointing profit report. Tesla Motors skidded for the second straight day. The electric car maker disclosed a third car fire and shares fell 7.5%. Whole Foods gave back 11% after some weak earnings. IBM was one of just two blue chips to post a gain. Shares added 0.4% today as the company announced a new chief financial officer. Must be some CFO, huh? Bonds rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 2.6%. And you? You're listening to Marketplace.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at what's coming up Friday. President Obama will be in New Orleans to talk about ways to grow the economy. And speaking of growth, we'll get personal income and spending data for the month of October from the Commerce Department. Something you can spend your money on? A subscription to HBO. The premium cable network first premiered on this day in 1972. I'm Bridget Bodner.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. The Food and Drug Administration does not like what we are eating. The FDA offered up some new rules today for public comment that would ban trans fats from our diets. For the nutrition label readers among you, we're talking partially hydrogenated oils. They are apparently no longer generally recognized as safe. And in fact, the FDA says cutting trans fats could prevent as many as 20,000 heart attacks a year. So we asked Marketplace's Adrienne Hill to do a little trans fat hunting.
I took the $4 and change I had to the vending machine and tried to buy myself some trans fat. First purchase, a jumbo honey bun.
Survey says no trans fats.
No. Second, Cheez-Its. No trans fats. There were no partially hydrogenated fats in the iced cinnamon roll or the chocolate chip cookies. Stymied. Where are the trans fats? Michael Jacobson is the executive director of the Center for Science in the Public Interest.
There's been tremendous progress in the food industry in getting rid of trans fat. I'd estimate that roughly 75% of the trans fat is gone.
He says a lot of small restaurants still cook with it. You can also find trans fats in microwave popcorn.
Pie crust, refrigerated biscuits, frostings.
A listener pointed out on Twitter that Tootsie Rolls have trans fats. Who knew? Bruce German is a food science professor at UC Davis. He says in some cases, companies struggle to find just the right replacement. Other times, it's a cost thing.
The majority of food in the marketplace competes to a very substantial extent on price.
And trans fats often cost a little less than the replacements. The most common substitutes, palm and coconut oil.
The investors in those are smiling.
And so am I. Because now I can eat those Cheez-Its without any partially hydrogenated guilt. I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
Here's more. What do Girl Scout cookies, McDonald's fries, and Cheetos have in common? All of them used to have trans fats, but don't anymore. And we have a longer list of foods that have all ditched trans fats. Some of them, by the way, kind of surprising. Check out the list at marketplace.org. When you think about the economy, do you ever consider all the stuff it's made up of? Not the stuff we buy. That's almost too easy. I mean the actual stuff it's made up of. The elements, the chemical elements that go into making modern life possible. The BBC's Justin Rowlett is trying to answer that very question in a new series he's working on. And he started with phosphorus. Justin, good to have you on again.
Very good to speak to you, Kai.
I'm obliged to say that you have to make me care about phosphorus, my friend.
Listen, I actually don't think that's going to be too hard, and I'll tell you
okay.
why. All life depends on phosphorus.
All right, then.
Plants need phosphorus. Bacteria needs phosphorus. None of us would be here if it wasn't for phosphorus.
What did you find then? I mean, as we use it in all these things that you talked about, where did you go and what did you find?
Well, what you find is that phosphorus, this incredibly important element, the key part of life, as we've heard, is in incredible short supply. Now, we use phosphorus because of modern agriculture. If you have great fields, you know, the plants grow, they take phosphorus out, you need to replenish it. So you need a source of phosphorus. Where's the phosphorus? Well, frankly, Kai, overwhelmingly in Morocco.
Morocco?
Morocco has a stranglehold on the world phosphorus market. Virtually all the mineable phosphorus in the world is in Morocco. So we're incredibly dependent. This is bigger than OPEC. And the question is, you know, what will the Moroccan government do over time? They've got this incredible monopoly. Will they put prices up? Will we all, you know, find that we're paying a lot more for our food because they recognize they've got this this control over this crucial element?
Is there that relationship? As phosphorus prices rise, so too does, corn out of Iowa or something?
Obviously it's a margin, it's an element in the corn prices. But yeah, if phosphorus prices rise, a component that is in the bread that you eat in the morning. And so, yeah, we all pay.
You know, you mentioned OPEC, which brings to mind oil, of course, and there's a finite supply of oil. Is there a finite supply of phosphorus? And what do we do if and when we run out?
There is a finite supply of easily mineable phosphorus. So the question is, are there ways of recovering the phosphorus that there is, for example, in the food that we eat? And it turns out, yes, there is. And I was sent to a sewage plant in called Slough. Yeah, because our bodies don't take up all the phosphorus in the food that we eat. Some of it, how shall I put this, passes through us.
Yeah, I was about to say I want your job, but now I really don't, because you get to run around and do all these fun things.
So we went to Slough, one of the least celebrated towns in Britain, to a sewage plant where they're trying to recover the phosphorus in sewage, and doing so quite successfully. Now, what they're saying is that over time, they reckon they could meet about 20% of the UK's phosphorus requirements from sewage. So a significant quantity, but, you know, nowhere near the amount of phosphorus we need to have the high yields of agriculture that we've come to depend on.
Where else will this elemental series take you other than sewage treatment plants?
Well, the obvious ones are sort of gold and stuff, but we thought, let's go to some of the less obvious but charismatic elements, if you like. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be looking at mercury, quicksilver. Going to be looking at helium, and we're going to be looking at aluminium.
Justin Rolitz, our occasional correspondent from the BBC. It's aluminum, by the way, my friend.
I don't think so, Kai.
Right,
could discuss this, tomato.
Yeah.
Let's work the whole thing out.
That's a whole different interview. All right, be good. Take care.
Cheers. Thank you very much indeed, Kai.
Way down on the list of big names in consumer electronics, and I do mean way on down, is an 88-year-old company that's been having a rough go. There are some analysts out there saying Radio Shack has to have a killer holiday shopping season to even survive another year. And that more importantly, it's got to answer a question it's been dodging for a while now. Is Radio Shack just a convenience store for techies, or is it a brand with all that implies? Aarti Shahani has that story.
In downtown San Francisco, Sunday afternoons are peak shopping time. But walk into a Radio Shack and it's nearly empty, with the exception of a few creative types like Yost Coquette.
There's all these cool electronic components here, like Arduinos.
That's a microcontroller that lets you build your own electronics. But Coquette is not here to buy an Arduino or anything else. He's here to do research.
I'm actually just checking out the floor space because I develop an iPhone case and I want to see what packaging looks like.
From coast to coast, Radio Shack is a familiar haven for do-it-yourself junkies and last-minute shoppers. It's got something for everyone.
Radio Shack has, you know, I think something like 10,000 different products, and that's the problem, that the stores are cluttered.
Michael Pachter is an analyst with Wedbush Securities, and he says Radio Shack is on its last leg.
The CEO is making changes there, but it's really a confusing place. It's not a real pleasant experience, and you have to look for the cool stuff.
Pachter says it's not just the well-known tale of retail store dies as internet sales surge. It's about building a relationship with a core group of dedicated customers.
Home Depot has, you know, paint matching. You can come in with a chip and they'll match the paint color. Abercrombie & Fitch has private label merchandise that you want, but Radio Shack has neither.
Last year, Radio Shack got a bit of a boost by selling the iPhone. But this past quarter, sales were down about $93 million, a 10% drop. It's now clearing out old merchandise and remodeling 2,000 stores nationwide. The company didn't respond to our interview request. And last month on a quarterly earnings call, Chief Financial Officer Holly Etlin wouldn't tell analysts if the newly remodeled stores are making more money.
We're not going to engage in commentary on profitability, individual four-wall profitability of individual stores. Next question, please.
On that same earnings call, CEO Joseph Magnacca said Radio Shack's now going to move on to health gadgets for fitness junkies. But he also wants to win back the do-it-yourself crowd Radio Shack neglected over the last decade.
The new Radio Shack can be relevant to both audiences by connecting on their shared mindset.
This strategy of casting a wide net, winning back the old customers and recruiting the new, it just might be what got Radio Shack into this predicament in the first place. In San Francisco, I'm Aarti Shahani for Marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note today, which will be, barring any actual news about the company, the last you hear of the Twitter IPO on this program. The company priced its shares at $26 last night. The market this morning decided they were worth way more than that. The first trade was at $46, as I said, and the closing price this afternoon, $44.90. So if you think about it that way, the biggest IPO of the year actually lost ground on its first day of trading. All right, so there you go. That's Marketplace from APM. Today, the Dow off 152 points, nearly 1%. The NASDAQ gave back 74 points. That is almost 2% there. The S&P 500 fell 23 points, about 1.33%. John Buckley, John Haas, Patty Hirsch, George Judson, Jonathan Karp, Ethan Lindsay, Dave Shaw, Betsy Streisand, and Celeste Wesson are the Marketplace editing staff. The managing editor is Sarah Gilbert. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.